Need vision and a reasonable solution.
All right, now call to order the August 4th, 2026 local government commission meeting. Welcome, everybody. Let's hand it over to Cynthia. Can you call the roll, please?
Good afternoon, everyone. We'll start with Secretary Marshall here. Auditor Bolick
here.
We have Ms. Tanisha Jacobs as a designee for Secretary Wooten today.
Here.
Thank you. Mr. Brown.
Here.
And Ms. Hoffman.
Here.
Thank you. Mr. Hughes.
Here.
Commissioner Johnson.
Here.
Mr. Stith.
Here.
And Treasurer Briner.
Here.
And everyone is in the room except for Ms. Jacobs and Ms. Hoffman, who are virtual today. The LGC staff in attendance are Denise Canada, the Secretary, Jennifer Wimmer, Director of Debt Management, Kendra Boyle, Director of Fiscal Management, Laura Rowe, Director of Policy and Compliance, in addition to myself, Becca, Robbie, and MJ helping us with our audio visual today. Just a few housekeeping items, which are the same as they have been. These meeting proceedings are being recorded and will be made available to the public pursuant to the department's recording of public meetings policy. We ask that those who are speaking today, please identify yourself. If you are a virtual participant, we ask that you please mute yourself when you're not speaking. If there are, the agenda for today's meeting is posted on the website, the LGC page, at www.nctreasurer.gov. If we have changes to the agenda, that will be announced during the meeting. We will take all votes by roll call, and without objection, LGC members, your motions and seconds will be considered as a yes vote unless you indicate otherwise during the roll call. The microphones in this room are sensitive, so if we have any visitors that would like to have a private conversation, please step to the lobby. Thank you.
All right, Cindy, thanks so much. Please join me in the Pledge of Allegiance and the salute to the flag of North Carolina. Pledge of Allegiance.
States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Salute the flag of North Carolina.
Review the conflict of interest statement. Members, please take a moment to review the agenda. Commission members are reminded of your duty to avoid conflicts of interest. Does any member have an actual or potential conflict of interest with respect to any matter on the agenda? Hearing none. Members, before we get into approval of the minutes and the agenda for today, I wanted to share something within the staff of the LGC. When Treasurer Briner came into this administration and when he hired me into this role, the LGC staff had a vacancy rate of about 25%, just made it difficult at times to do the work we need to do for you. And we have made a lot of changes and reclassified positions and tried to other changes were necessary. So I'm very happy to let you know that we have three new staff members just in the past few weeks, and they're here, and I'd love to introduce them to you. So if you can stand up as I introduce you, Danielle Spencer in the back is in the fiscal section working for Kendra's team. She has a background in governmental accounting as well as higher education and private sector and came to us all the way from Texas. So thank you for coming all the way here just to work for the only in the nation LGC.
As a native Texan, it's better here.
No problem. In addition to Danielle, we have two staff that are fellows through the School of Government's Lead for NC Fellowship program. Other state agencies and many local governments have participated in the fellowship, but this is our first time and we're very excited. So Prerna Dash and Roman Creasy, right at the back, joined us on Monday. They'll be with us all the way through June, full-time staff. Karen is a recent graduate from UNC Chapel Hill, and Roman is a recent graduate from Villanova, but has a master's or has an undergrad degree from Western Carolina. So very happy all three of you are on board, and thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much.
All right, moving into the minutes. You received the minutes in your packet. These are the minutes from the July 7th meeting. Is there a motion to approve the minutes?
I'll make a motion to move the minutes.
Second.
Any questions before we vote on the minutes? Hearing none. Cindy, will you call the roll?
Okay. July 7th minutes, motion Brown, second Stiff. Secretary Marshall.
Aye.
Auditor Bolick.
Aye.
Ms. Jacobs.
Aye.
Thank you. Ms. Hoffman.
Sorry, aye.
Thank you. Mr. Hughes.
Aye.
Commissioner Johnson.
Aye.
Senator Reiner.
Aye.
Thank you. That motion carries.
All right, Cindy, thank you so much. Moving into attachment A, which is the consent agenda. This is the item for Charlotte all the way through the hospital district of Surrey County. I haven't heard from any of you to remove an item for conflict or any other reason. So looking for a motion in a second, and then we'll discuss the consent agenda.
Move to approve.
Second.
You, Mr. Hughes, Mr. Stith.
I have a question. Yeah. Valdez is in this packet.
Sure, that's right.
We got some outside comments about that. Are we going to keep that in or pull it out? Or
you can pull it out if you wish. Right now, it's still included in the consent agenda, but we can pull it to vote separately.
That's... I would amend the motion to pull it out.
Right? Is that how it works?
You can.
Friendly amendment to the motion.
Sure.
We'll vote.
Okay. Should we vote to remove that from the consent agenda?
I think we've had privilege before where a member can just pull it.
Okay, thanks. All right. So let's set all these aside and look at the rest of the consent agenda, and then we can discuss and vote on Valdez separately. With a motion and a second for the consent agenda, I'll turn it over to Jennifer in case she has any comments to make on any of these items.
Okay, I have two quick comments. You'll notice that the Fayetteville Public Works Commission has two basically identical projects. That is because it is one project. They are coming for both the SRF approval and a tentative revenue bond approval for sometime in the future, so that all sources of funds are identified. They plan to spend the SRF funds first and then issue revenue bonds at the time that they need that. For cash flow purposes. We have had one of these types of transactions recently with the Cape Fear Public Utility Authority, exactly the same way. We wanted to identify the sources and get that preliminary approval. The revenue bonds will come back when at the time that they need to be issued with their team with their underwriters and closer to the time that they need to set a pricing date. The second item that I wanted to point out is some additional information. Oxford, their interim financing RFP has come back. Normally with these USDA interim financings, there is a time window to set the interest rate and the bank that would be taking this, and that is why some of the time it does not make the packet. However, I would like to say that Truist has been awarded the bank lending option at 4.23% for the interim financing. And again, these, once the construction period is over, it is intended, and the USDA has already approve this project to be taken out with long-term financing.
Yeah. Any questions about the items on the consent agenda? None in person and none online. We have a motion and a second. Cindy, will you call the roll on the consent agenda excluding Valdez?
All right. That was motion Hughes, second Step, and not Valdez. Secretary Marshall.
Aye.
Auditor Bolich.
Aye.
Ms. Jacobs.
Aye.
Thank you. Mr. Brown.
Aye.
Ms. Hoffman. We're voting on the consent agenda minus Albies.
That was an aye.
It was an aye. Commissioner Johnson?
Aye.
And Treasurer Briner?
Aye.
Ms. Hoffman, Ms. J, give me a thumbs up if you said. Okay, thank you.
Yes, aye.
Thank you very much. That motion carries.
All right, thanks so much. Now turning to the town of Valdez. Looking for a motion and a second, then we'll discuss the item. Or if no motion, then we'll move to a discussion first.
And I'll second.
All right. Commissioner Johnson, Treasurer Briner. All right, questions or discussion about the $10.8 million item for the town of Valdez? Secretary Marshall?
Yeah, we all got a lot of stuff that came in from a former town councilman, and that provided me not on this, the argument, so to speak, or the comparisons and what have you. But when I looked at the Valdez debt load that was Exhibit 1 to that, it seemed like this town was pushing things way out to the, I don't know when, say, the splash pad was constructed or borrowed, but they still have about $420,000 for 30 years out there. So over the life of the loan, I mean, extending it out makes the payment smaller, but over the life of the loan, it's almost, you know, half of the value of the project itself. And I don't know about these others, but is this a town that is just trying to stretch out their payments to the max in order to get more done for short-term improvements, but yet long-term financial debt hanging over their heads? And
you thought about it, Jennifer, and then I can jump in if needed.
So depending on the strategy and the composition of what the units have in terms of financing abilities, the USDA loans are requested at a time so that they can have a longer payment. A lot of the units who are not very big, but would like to provide these not only you know, installment financings, but water sewer projects and things like that go to the USDA for up to 40 years of loan repayments. Because of the timing, and it looks like, let's see, that would have been probably 2018 when they did the splash pad. That it came, and I'm can follow up on that, but based on the normal maturity, they probably got a very good interest rate at that time. What this commission has done in the past is if they were going to refinance any USDA debt, it would be refinanced to the time period that an installment purchase would have regularly come through the local government commission, which is about 20 years. So with the difference in interest rates and then basically shortening the loan term significantly, then there would be a larger debt service payment for that. In terms of the other debt, most of the remaining debt is a revolving loan. So that's water and wastewater needs. Again, most of them are about 25 years, but CEQ can go up to 30. And this commission has also allowed that. So it's based on the credit, really, from when these requests to the USDA have been approved.
Get in with a follow-up question or a follow-up comment. I hear you asking about whether they're making very long terms, in essence, because they can't afford to pay off the debt. So I do notice that the debt that's before you today is a 15-year loan term. So then I guess the question for Jennifer is 15 years what they requested? Did they request longer? And we said no, or is 15 years typical for the type of project that's being approved today?
15 years to 20 years is very typical to all the other municipalities and counties for this type of project. Also, it shows that they've also gone to a commercial bank, Webster, for that loan, and they have provided credit worthiness at that level. So again, one way that usually improvement is seen in credit is that you're not solely dependent on USDA financing. They, again, if they did get USDA approval for this, they would still have to take out an interim financing for the construction loan. They have decided to go a different route with this. Obviously, there's some changes in their taxes that would then pay for this so that they would not continue what you were saying, that the lengthiness of the rest of their outstanding debt.
Just please know, I love splash pads. Challenge with splash pads. But when you go that long in the debt versus something like water and sewer, which are health and safety issues, I mean, I love splash pads, please. But as long as they can pay, but it seemed like such a long time out there for this.
We do not, at the time that these projects would have come, they would have already been in contact with the USDA and at a local level. And, they're on the line as well. But at the local level, that was their choice of financing. So we do not, unless there's, serious health and safety issue, point people in that direction. It is a longer process to get that approval, as well as making sure that they have their construction documents in place. But at some point, that's the only solution for the way that the local governments want to obtain these items.
Well, if staff thinks they can make their payments, and the bank certainly thinks they can make their payments, they wouldn't be doing the loan.
So I guess one question, former commissioner's materials point out how much debt they'll have relative to other towns this size. But it also seems like they have an extraordinarily high fund balance too. I'm trying to understand those two things together. We have a bunch of cash in the bank that are borrowing.
It's a question to new part. This says pledged donations. That to me means people have said they're going to put that much into it, but it's not really there yet. Yes. They already have it.
I believe they have some in hand, and we can verify that with the town. However, because it is a joint police and fire facility, there have been, not only in this case, but other cases where volunteer fire department associations and things like that, and then also town, people that want to donate for this, and they've been actively looking for alternative funding sources to supplement any, loan that they have to take out.
So in that case, there may be some more donations they get.
They wanted to be conservative, though, and only they had any.
All right.
Commissioner Johnson, we do have the town on the line. If there's anyone from the town that you'd like to hear from about the donations, or if you're satisfied.
Well, that's fine. I wasn't used to seeing donations.
Sure. Right. Sure.
Information.
Sure.
To your question, Treasurer Reiner, it could be that they have such a high fund balance because they've chosen to do the debt. Those can kind of offset each other. So on that higher fund balance is, there's a lot to be said for having that available liquidity. And
sure, 125%, I think it's not
right. Right. And so, yes, there could be a mix of using fund balance and then less debt.
True.
That could be a consideration that they make doing this.
It's also different to have 125% in a small town than in
sure.
Right. Something like that. Yeah, 133% is about, you know, it gives them a fund balance of 9.5 million, but in a different town like Greensboro.
Sure. The point is taken. They have a lot of fund balance. Yeah. And yeah,
that's right.
Members, other questions about the town of Valdez that approval? That group. All right. Fresh my mind if we have a motion on the floor. I think we do a motion and a second.
Mm-hmm. Second.
All right, great. Thank you. And then, Cindy, will you call the roll?
Well, hearing no further discussion, the motion was Commissioner Johnson, seconded by Brian, with Valdez application. Secretary Marshall, aye. Thank you. Auditor Bolick?
Aye.
Ms. Jacobs?
Aye.
Thank you. Mr. Brown?
Aye.
Ms. Hoffman? Mr. Hughes?
Aye.
And Mr. Smith?
Aye.
Thank you. That motion carries.
All right. Thank you so much. We're turning to attachment B. We have two UAL. Somewhat UAL units for your review today, and we'll go through each of those separately. Let's start with the town of Newport. We'll have Jennifer explain the project and then Kendra explain why I called them sort of UAL units.
Yes. So as I will continue Denise's comments, at the time that the applications were due for this meeting, the town of Newport, as well as LGC staff with the coach team, identified the town of Newport needing a compliance approval for a vehicles purchased during the time that they were on the UAL and should have come for approval. So that is, it's just a, they've already had the delivery of all 11 vehicles. And so this is a compliance issue.
So you have in your packet a write-up about the reasons that this town was on the UAL. And I say was on because we have begun the compilation of the new UAL. And in doing so, the first step is to look at those units that are on that no longer score to be on. And that is where Newport falls in that category. And you can see in your write-up the remarkable progress that they have made. They had the turnover in their staff with, you know, they had experienced three finance officers and two town managers in the since COVID era. And so this is a unit that has shown remarkable improvement, not only financially, but also in their internal controls. And they have been released from the UAL. So just wanted to bring that to your attention, make sure that you're aware that some units do come off the UAL. and this is one of those. And, you know, we want to congratulate that unit, but also pull them into compliance for the things that have happened in the past.
Any questions about this item for Newport? I do have a question.
I congratulate Newport on getting off the UAL list, and I'll make a motion to move the item.
Second.
Motion and a second. Cindy, a motion from Mr. Brown, and a second from Mr. Smith. Will you call the roll?
Discussion? No. We shall. Mr. Brown and Smith. Secretary Marshall.
Aye.
Auditor Bolick.
Aye.
Ms. Jacobs.
Aye.
Ms. Hoffman.
You didn't get a delay.
Moving here. Ms. Hoffman, hello.
It was on.
Yeah, that's aye. We're going to go with that.
New finger. Mr. Hughes.
Aye.
Mr. Johnson.
Aye.
Treasurer Briner.
Aye.
Thank you. That motion carries.
All right, thanks. I'll turn it back to Jennifer for the town of Norwood.
So the town of Norwood contacted us several months ago for the approval of the lease vehicles because they were on the UAL. And so at the time that the application was due, this is a current lease, and the UAL units would be required to come for vehicles that units that are not on the UAL would not be required. So this is current, but I will turn it over to Kendra.
So this is not just because of the comments you make, Commissioner Stenhouse. But this is a unit that through the course of compiling and doing that first stages of release from the UAL, this is a unit that we believe has made the market improvement and has been responsive to our staff and has made the changes that are necessary to be removed from the UAL. And so that is the status. You have their write-up about the improvement of their financial stability and their improvement as well in internal controls and compliance. So
thanks. So you wouldn't need to vote on this one technically, but it was already on the agenda before they came off the UAL, and it seemed unnecessarily confusing to the town to pull it and not vote on it since it's already on. So with that said, looking for a motion and a second, and then any discussion.
Motion to approve.
Second.
Mr. Smith, Secretary Marshall, any discussion about this item 3-1-1? Hearing none. All right.
Okay. Town of Norwood, that was Smith and Marshall. Auditor Bullock.
Aye.
Ms. Jacobs.
Aye.
Mr. Brown.
Aye.
Ms. Hoffman.
Aye.
Thank you. Mr. Hughes.
Aye.
Ms. Commissioner Johnson.
Aye.
And Treasurer Briner.
Aye.
Thank you. Motion also carries.
Thank you. Turning to attachment C, the one unit with financial performance indicators of concern. This is for Greensboro. Greensboro was just before you a few months ago. We talked about them quite a lot at the time, but I will turn this item over to Jennifer to present the project and Kendra to talk through FPIC and some newer financial information we have since the last meeting.
So the city of Greensboro is coming to you to issue $290 million of revenue bond in bond anticipation notes. Their water and wastewater and utility system is very large and has multiple projects going on at the same time. And these bond anticipation notes will be used for the projects you see, wastewater, water treatment plants, and other items, as well as some future for supporting current and future economic growth. They have the intention of taking these out for long-term financings, like their last revenue bonds for water sewer. So this is a private placement with PNC. And it is 3-year initial period with a 5-year term out if necessary.
So you remember from, as Denise mentioned a few months ago, we City of Greensboro came before us, and the main concerns that staff had were related to their general fund balance available as a percentage of expenditures having been below our 25% threshold for fiscal year 25 is the third year in which they had been below, as well as the continuing trend of using fund balance available for operations. And so those two items were of concern with us. For fiscal year 2025, that ratio was 22.91. And I have had some conversations with the city and about their fiscal year 26 numbers. And of course, those are not audited yet. But what I have been told is that they are coming in, preliminary estimates are that fund balance available as a percentage of expenditures is going to remain about the same. And you might recall that there was discussion prior that revenues had been increased, that things had been taken place so that revenues would increase. So fund balance available as a percentage of expenditures not changing tells me that revenues and expenditures increased at the same level. So it doesn't show us the progress that we hope, but it's not dropping. So the other thing to take into consideration is that for fiscal year 2027, they adopted a budget that appropriated fund balance again, but instead of at 26 is where it was 13.8 million that they appropriated, it was 5.8. So a decrease in the amount that they're using to balance their budget. And I think that those are pertinent facts for you all to know. And whether their fund balance available changes is based on what the actual results are in fiscal year 27. And you may recall from their response to us about that percentage, their plan was to increase it by 2030 to the 25%. This is the third year in a row where we've not seen an increase. So just things to keep in mind. I want to also state that they have their longtime finance officer recently retired. Their current finance officer has been boots on the ground for about 6 weeks now. So he's getting acclimated to what they have going on there and will be very involved in the audit process, obviously. And that has started. They've got their contract in place and they've gone uploading documents to get that taken care of and have scheduled field work.
Thank you.
Just comment more than questions. Sure. And that was helpful because you touched on the question I had. I thought I saw it in the documentation, a timeline to reach, you know, some resolution around their fund balance. And my concern is they do have the timeline, but they don't seem to be making progress toward that. And are we going to wait till the last year to miraculously do that? Or so that's my concern. So what's your sense with this? You know, is there some potential with changing of staff that it'll be more aggressive toward the 2030 goal, or can we send that message that would be nice to see some movement before we get to 2030? Or
I think you just did.
Okay.
Yeah, and my take on that is that this is the budget is put together board with help of their staff, and they take a vote on it. So, and budget amendments throughout the year are voted on by the board. So it just depends on how they treat things throughout the year.
Thank you.
Should I just make a couple comments? Nancy Hoffman. I think it's important that they're hearing this from us because, as Mr. Stitches just said, we don't want to wait until we don't want to wait three more years and find that Greensboro is still in this situation. So I think it's important that we're very clear on this point that we need to see progress in the next year.
Just a reminder on what the issuance was last couple of months ago for the $220 million. What was that? What was the purpose of that? Can't remember. I don't have it.
But most of that was water and sewer as well.
It's listed as revenue, so that would probably make sense.
Yeah, and so it's
for all at one time. Why are we coming back two, three months later? Why would the city not come with one ask for one big project? Why is it broken up into two within 3 months? Is there any rationale for that?
So the revenue bonds usually take out a previous revenue ban, and that the timing on those might have been an issue that they had to take it out,
okay,
or the market was at a time that they needed that long-term financing. But we can.
I'm just curious. I mean, that makes sense. I mean, you can take advantage of the market if you want to.
Right, and it's important to know that their water and sewer fund did not show any signs of distress at all. They've got a good quick ratio. They've got a good unrestricted cash as a percentage of expenditures. So there were no concerns related to the water and sewer fund. It was strictly the general fund.
In other words,
and the city has tended to raise water and sewer rates annually, at least during the 14 years that I served on the council. So they're very careful about doing that.
Well, upon Kendra's comment, I think if this were general obligation debt, you might have different thoughts from staff or might not see this on the agenda, but water sewer portion of the finances are strong. But it's, you're right, you don't want to get to 2030 and see no improvement when you have a government like this where, as Kendra very diplomatically alluded to, it's budgeting. It's choosing how much to spend. And we have seen over the past 6 months what happens when those issues aren't dealt with finally. And you end up in a situation like Rocky Mount. But I think that at the end of the day, this is before you because staff are comfortable with the water sewer finances of the unit. All right. And we got into discussion before we took a motion, but looking for a motion in a second nonetheless.
Make the motion to move the item.
Second.
Thank you, Commissioner Hoffman and Commissioner Johnson. Any other discussion on this item? I think we've beaten it, but make sure.
Well, just to say plainly what I think maybe others have already said, I'm happy to vote for this one, but the next one I'm going to have a hard time voting for until we see progress in fund balance.
Particularly if it's GM.
Yes.
I mean, as the state auditor, I'll just say I'm concerned that a municipality that carries as much weight across the state of North Carolina is not complying with, you know, basic budgetary fund balances. I said, Secretary Marshall, you heard me. I said today that there is a crisis in municipalities for a lot of reasons across the state of North Carolina. They're evidenced by recent work out of the Office of North Carolina State Auditor that relate to staff, particularly in smaller municipalities, not having the skill set and council members at particularly in smaller municipalities, not having the, I don't know if you want to say courage or wherewithal to ask staff tough questions. And then in the larger municipalities, is budget discipline and controls in place to monitor spending. And you know, I would agree with Treasurer Briner. It does raise, it certainly raises a question that unfortunately our office has seen across the state of North Carolina. So I'm with the treasurer. I'm happy to approve this, but I do think that it speaks to a larger question of municipalities and budget discipline.
Well, I'm going to ask a question I was going to hold till later, but it's kind of appropriate now. I know that town managers and town clerks, it's mandatory that they attend a school of government classes. Is it mandatory that the elected town council have an overview of what their obligation is and how to read budgets 101 and those kinds of things?
It's not it's not mandatory, but it's offered by the School of Government.
But it's not obligatory.
Oh, like Kendra weigh in on the specific requirements for the UAL units, which Greensboro is not.
Yeah.
Okay. School of Government does offer, a fairly comprehensive program on those exact
it's
issues,
available.
Madam Secretary. And But it's not mandatory.
One of the goals that we usually set for units of local government that go on the UAL is for the board to take some training. And we offer a set of modules on our website that they can take the training through that. They're quick, short things, but there are other options for boards to have an awareness of what their responsibilities are
being a unit of local government in North
Carolina. And they don't have to be on the UAL list to access your training.
No, not at all. No. And in fact, GASB has put out a set of videos, short 15-minute videos explaining in everyday language that's very similar to what we have, but ours is tailored, of course, to North Carolina.
Yeah, I mean, very smart people get on town councils, but dealing with a municipal budget or a state budget is very different than other budgeting that people have at their family or at their business or what have you. So it's a specialized area that probably ought to be required for all.
This is Cindy Aiken. From your lips to General Assembly's ears. Being, Kendra, correct me if I'm wrong, but in our various toolkit legislative proposals over the last 8 years, what was passed was the mandatory for the managers, if they're on the unit assistance list. Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
and there was a proposal to require the same of the elected officials of said units. Not law at this time.
It's so if they get to UAL, it's after the fact.
Well,
right.
Yeah. Let's, I know, one step at a time.
Yeah. You know, it's the political will of all those involved.
Right. I mean, Secretary Marshall, you've made a really important point. You know, I went and took the School of Government course the first term I served on Greensboro City Council, which was 15 years ago. It's a 2-day course. And even though I had a business background, it was certainly very helpful to me. It would really be useful, I think, if it were a requirement.
Any other discussion? Otherwise, turn it back over to Cindy.
Okay. For Greensboro, the motion was Hoffman, second Johnson. Secretary Marshall.
Aye.
Auditor Bolick.
Aye.
Ms. Jacobs.
Aye.
Mr. Brown.
Aye.
Mr. Hughes.
Aye.
Mr. Stiff.
Yes.
Motion, Treasurer Bryan.
Aye.
All right. Motion carries.
Thank you. Turning to the last item on the agenda, Attachment D, the Notices of Noncompliance and Appeals, which I know is a bit of a wordy title, but I'm going to turn it over to Laura to give you a refresher on what this process is and the step of the process that you'll be doing today. There's much more to be done at the September meeting, but I'll let Laura describe what is before you for vote.
Thank you, Denise. Good afternoon, commissioners. I'm Laura Rowe, Director of Policy and Compliance with the State and Local Government Finance Division. So in your packets, I provided sort of a brief overview of what this process entails, along with the proposed motion that I'll touch on. So this is the third year that we're engaging in this cycle of reviewing the audit reports that have not been filed for counties and municipalities. What we're looking at is the fiscal year 2025 and sort of a little bit of an overview. For fiscal year 25, the due date was December 31st, 2025. So we changed that to give the unit 6 months after the close of the fiscal year to file their audit reports. When we come to 9 months, the statute provides that the units get a notice of noncompliance, letting them know that we still have not received your audit report for the prior fiscal year end. And so this year, when we issued that notice of noncompliance on April 1st, we had 116 counties and municipalities that received that. We had 100 municipalities and 16 counties that were on that list. So with that 9-month mark, we send that notice reminder, hey, you know, we haven't received your audit. Come 12 months after fiscal year end, so June 30th, units that still have not filed that fiscal year 2025 report, they become subject to having a portion of their sales tax withheld. And so we are 12 months after the close of the last fiscal year. At that point, units are able to file an appeal to try to not have withholding happen of their distributed sales tax. with those appeals, staff and the LGC have put in place guidelines and criteria to apply to those appeals. And as we're reviewing them to determine whether or not they should be granted, we're looking to take action on some of those appeals this afternoon. The Department of Revenue is involved. They are the ones that actually process that withholding, and our staff communicate with them, let them know that withholding needs to be initiated. We also will communicate with them when audits are received and withholdings can be released. And so that's really sort of the Cliff Notes version of what this process is that we've been, like I said, been going. We are on our third cycle and kind of going through this process. So in the in your materials on the next page of the overview, you'll see kind of where we were, sort of the snapshot on April 1st when we issued the notices of noncompliance. So at 9 months after fiscal year end, we had the largest bulk of units that we were looking at were those that were missing 1 and 2 years. So I guess that's good news that we don't have a lot of units that are multiple years behind, but the snapshot is there to look at. One thing I noted, so in looking at this time this year compared to where we were in 2024 in this cycle, in 2025 in this cycle, we now have 5 units that were at missing 4 fiscal years, where at the same time the year before we were only at 1. So what that kind of tells us is some of the units that were missing 3, they're not really making progress, and now they're kind of continuing on a bit of a bad path and not getting their reports in. You'll see also in the materials that since April 1st, we have had a lot of improvement with at least 49 units filing that 2025 audit report. And so even though the notice is issued saying, hey, we need to get your audit in, a lot of units do follow through with that. So they get their audit in and they're good to go. We do, though, have a number of units that have not gotten it in. We're past June 30th, and so there'll be a number of appeals that we'll be looking at and presenting to the LGC at the September meeting for action to be taken. So that's a little bit of the overview there. I'm happy to answer any questions.
Is the percentage, is there a determined number or a certain scale or that is withheld?
Yeah, so that calculation is set out in statute, and the withholding is 5% of 1/12 of the unit's budget that they'll adopt this year. And so that's how the monthly withholding is calculated. And then there's a maximum that can be withheld, and that's calculated at 150% of the contract price for the last audit that we have on file. So those calculations are set out, and then that information is what we provide to DOR so that they know how much to withhold each month, and then up to that max. To add to that, withholdings then only they're only withheld for a maximum of 2 years or until that audit is submitted that prompted that withholding to happen. So there's, it's certainly not indefinite, but even if that audit doesn't ultimately get in, if that 2-year period comes, we'll work with DOR in getting that released.
Thanks so much, Laura. So draw that to a close. So what you have before you today are appeal letters from units that are missing 1 audit. The appeal is appealing that you do not withhold sales tax from those units. One other piece of helpful information for you to know, and I believe this is referenced in the resolution that's before you, is that the LGC has previously adopted guidelines stating that units that are missing no more than 1 audit, if they file an appeal, the appeal will be deemed successful. There's a bit of a question of whether you maybe need to vote on it or maybe don't. You already have those guidelines saying these appeals will be successful, but to bring all of these before you and give you a full picture of who's missing the audit, what you have before you today is a resolution to approve appeals for these units that are missing 1.
This is Ms. Jacobs. That was actually going to be my question, exactly what we were voting on, because based on the language in the resolution, like based on the recommendations that the LGC had adopted, the appeals would already be, I guess, successful. But I guess you're just asking for confirmation of that. And just to be clear, based on that, there it would be no withholding of sales and use tax distributions. I just want to make sure that's correct, especially from my position.
No withholding for these units that are listed on page D5, Ahoski, okay, all the way down through Wynn. And then the units missing two or more audits bring before you in September.
Okay.
So your readies before that meeting, it can be a little bit long.
I think Secretary Wooten will be back before then, so.
Congratulations. Members, any other questions about the process generally or about the resolution you're being asked to put on today?
Move approval.
Second.
All right. Motion from Auditor Bullock, second. Mr. Stiff. Unless any other discussion, looking
for maybe one point of discussion that I have my father's voice in my head, not asking questions you don't want the answer to. But of these 35 units that we're granting automatic appeals to, can I assume that all 35 of them we also granted automatic appeals to last year?
I don't know if I would assume that.
Well, that's good.
Yeah.
Better than I would have guessed.
Yeah.
The majority? I mean, they kind of.
You might. It's probably a majority that they're kind of just behind,
right,
and they're maintaining,
right,
being 1 year behind. And I will note that there's, you'll see a footnote one next to 11 of these units. So when the notice was issued, they were missing two audit reports, and they improved their position by getting at least one in. And so they improved and moved up to this category of successful appeal, while at the same time actually filing a letter to appeal to us explaining what the situation was with the audit. But they're probably not exact.
Okay.
It's also true that you have at least one unit I see on this list that last year was missing three audits.
All right.
So
I'm more optimistic than I thought.
I believe, I can check this, but I believe Chocolinity was missing three audits last year, and you had extended discussions with that unit and their representatives. And at this point, Chocolinity is missing one, which is not good, but it's not three. So I appreciate the improvement.
That is progress.
Just
a point of clarity on process. You know, clearly you have to catch up on your audit. What is the process when they submit one, get approval from LGC, then it's sort of rolling from there, or what's a
quick? That's right. You need to catch up sequentially. You contract with an auditor for the farthest back fiscal year that you're missing. You put that contract on file with us. That audit is completed, approved by our staff, or
accepted.
Thank you. Accepted by our staff. At that point, you can move on into the next.
And so that's where I wanted to go down. So once a unit submits, what's the typical turnaround time on acceptance then?
On acceptance, we average 2 weeks during the peak of audit review season. So if it's a unit that's coming in this time of year,
okay,
it could be a day that before our staff would have comment to the auditor and the unit. If there are any things that need to be changed, then it's dependent upon how quickly they respond. But our response this time of year is very fast.
Okay. And so they need that stage gate before going to the next one. So that my thought was, as you were honing in on if they're going to be a catch up, what's that real process look like? And they get the green light from you, they go to the next. Okay.
Correct. And we have to approve the audit contract. So they'll get the audit into us, it gets accepted, and they get the audit contract in, and then we just keep it moving forward.
Okay.
Can't complete a fiscal year without the previous.
Yeah.
You got to take the balance.
Yeah, I had that part. I was just wondering, once they did, how soon can I go to the next?
You can do it pretty quick.
Yeah.
I mean, it's, if you have all you've got all the financials there, it can be done. And sometimes that's the problem.
Yeah.
It's gathering the financials.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you.
We have maybe not several, but at least a handful of units that have submitted three audits since you met on this topic last year. Mm-hmm. Telford is one unit that comes to mind. They were several years behind.
Who was that?
Telford.
Oh, right.
Recently submitted the third audit since last September. That's phenomenal work. Of course, it's smaller units, they're maybe a little bit quicker than larger units to turn an audit around, but smaller units tend to be the ones that are behind. They can get caught up in a year with the right combination of staff and outside contracted folks.
Okay.
It's doable. This can be done.
That's what I thought.
Well, a corollary to the treasurer's question is that pre this activity 3 years ago, I'm assuming we're in better shape in getting delinquent audits in. And that this was a stick and a carrot that it really took a lot of debate by this organization and a lot of consideration to do this, because taking away their sales tax money is a pretty big stick. Not a total good stick, but, you know. So is a sense that we are better than we were, say, 4 or 5 years ago?
That predates me. I know that predates Laura. Do you have any?
Yeah, what I can tell you is the first year that we implemented this, we had 135 units that received a notice of noncompliance at that 9 month mark. In year 2025, we had 118, and now this year we're at 116. So we're trending in the right direction, you might say. But I can't
speak.
Yeah, I can't speak to it. Yeah.
We can pull the data for you for next month started. Has it been a huge incentive?
But also the pandemic came in there, and a lot of folks were having trouble with illnesses and absences and folks not being willing to do government work. And I mean, there were just, I'm assuming all of the excuses that we were told were valid excuses or valid happenings. So maybe it's not fair to compare. So.
There's other questions for me or for Laura about this process or the resolution before you today.
We have an answer. After a quick calculation, because someone asked about is the list similar? 14 units on this year's attachment A were on last year's. And I hate to bring this up, but actually three are counties, Bertie, Caswell, and Graham.
And Pender.
And the others are municipalities. So 14 of this year's 35 are in the food fund. Just the 1 year behind.
That an AI answer.
I didn't hear what you
said.
That's okay.
All right, we have a motion and a second. No other discussion. Looking for Cindy to call the roll.
Okay. On this, the attachment D resolution for these 35 units, successful appeals, Bolick and Stiff. Secretary Marshall.
Aye.
Ms. Jacobs.
Aye.
Thank you. Mr. Brown.
Aye.
Ms. Hoffman.
Aye.
Thank you. Mr. Hughes.
Aye.
Commissioner Johnson.
Aye.
Treasurer
Bryan. Aye. All right, thank you so much. That concludes the business on our agenda. Is there any other business or any other matters before the commission? If not, looking for a motion to adjourn, we'll do this by voice vote.
Move to adjourn.
Thank you, Mr. Smith. And a second, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Thank you so much. The meeting's adjourned.
Thank you.
Today's a day of short meetings.